Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, preparing for disaster in America on Tuesday, September 17th, 2013. I'm your host, Joe Terry, and the South Bay Show is brought to you by the Academy of Foreign Languages. If you have any interest in learning a new language or brushing up on existing language skills, you should know about the Academy of Foreign Languages. Located in Palos Verdes, the Academy of Foreign Languages specializes in the art of communication. Their mission is to provide the finest language instruction possible. They recognize that each student has distinctive needs and crafts their teaching technique to optimize an individual's particular learning skills. At the Academy of Foreign Languages, they strive to create a comfortable environment conducive to learning. So whether you're learning a new language or would simply like to converse in your native tongue, the Academy of Foreign Languages can accommodate you. For more information, visit their website at www.academyofforeignlanguages.com. That's all spelled out, academyofforeignlanguages.com. Or call 310-975-4133. That's 310-975-4133. You can find out more about us at facebook.com/ The South Bay Show, or visit our website at thesouthbayshow.com. Preparing for disaster in America. This is a subject that can never be treated lightly, but we do our best to make it interesting, engaging, and yes, even entertaining to learn the few key skills and primary information that could save your life, your family's lives, that of a neighbor in a time of crisis, or the life of a treasured pet. Our mission is to engage your heart and mind and build your knowledge and skills to help you prepare for whatever may come. This show is a true collaboration with solid roots in the community and a partnership with the official disaster preparation establishment. Our producer is the president of the local Manhattan Beach Community Emergency Response Team Association, Mr. George Butts. Hey, George, how are you doing today?
Good morning, Joe. I'm wonderful. I'm fine. It's a great Tuesday morning. Good morning, listeners.
Good morning to you, George. And of course, with us today is owner, producer, writer of South Bay by Jackie.com, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
I'm well this morning, Joe. Good morning, George.
Good morning, young lady.
So now today we're continuing in a series that we've been working on, which is fabulous. We're talking with the leaders in preparation and I guess the leaders in disaster preparation as well in our communities. Jackie, who's our guest today?
Our guest this morning is Chief Kevin Smith of the El Segundo Fire Department. Kevin has a bachelor's degree from Cal State University in public administration, a master's degree from Cal State University in emergency services administration, and is a certified chief officer through the California State Fire Marshal's Office. Kevin joined the El Segundo Fire Department in August of 1985 as a firefighter. He promoted to the rank of engineer in April 1990, attained the rank of captain in October 1994, and became battalion chief in June 2001. He has been serving as chief of the El Segundo Fire Department since May 2006. Chief Smith is very active in the community he serves. He is currently a member of the El Segundo Rotary Club, a former member of the El Segundo Optimist Club, and also serves as leader at the district level in Rotary. He is active in the El Segundo Sister City program, in which he provides training and surplus fire equipment to firefighters in Guaymas, Mexico. He has also served as the president of the South Bay Police and Fire Memorial Foundation for the last 3 years. A Los Angeles native, Kevin resides in El Segundo. He has 3 children and 2 granddaughters. Welcome to the program, Chief. We are so glad you could join us this morning.
Thank you so much. I'm very pleased to be with you.
Thank you, Chief. It's great to have you. And we're so pleased at this series of shows that we've been able to get together, and George has been able to produce, of having the chiefs of police and the chiefs of fire in the various cities that we've talked with, because you are on the front lines of our disaster preparation establishment and also, of course, public safety. So I guess the first question is, and we don't really focus on disaster preparation, but my first question is, Chief, how do you see the overall picture of disaster preparation from the point of view of the fire department?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say this show is a tremendous mechanism for getting the word out, and disaster preparedness, from my perspective, is a weakness in society that many people are at risk. We all have a tendency to react rather than be proactive, and I would say that the majority of people are not prepared for the event that may be upcoming. And so, as far as a fire department, for most of my career, we had emergency management or disaster preparedness. It's changed its titles over the years, but that function was housed within the fire department. It's within the city scope. Not a whole lot of funding, not a whole lot of emphasis, but more here in El Segundo than many of the South Bay cities. So our city has taken it seriously, and it's typically been a one-person operation where that person would focus not only with the residents but also leaders in business and industry, and attempt to emphasize the importance of everybody being prepared. And it's very clear to me that a fire department such as ours or a police department such as ours here in El Segundo is going to very quickly be overwhelmed in the event of emergency. So the residents and the businesses being prepared on their own to sustain themselves is critical.
Right. It is one thing for we'll call ourselves the pundits or the media to talk about it, but it's once again a whole different feeling and a whole different reality to have the leaders in the community of our public safety, official arms to say when something happens. And of course, here in California, we don't worry about the biblical floods happening in Colorado. We worry about the big one, the earthquakes and fires and mudslides. But when it happens, if it happens, whenever it happens, public safety officials, public safety professionals like yourself are going to be very, very busy, and people are going to have to be able to hunker down on their own. Now we're talking week, 2 weeks, perhaps, without fresh potable drinking water. These are things that most people just are not taking in and really, really studying and thinking about in general.
Yes, you're 100% correct, and I think people have a false sense of security that they pay taxes and they've got this fire department and they see the bright red trucks driving around on a daily basis, and most people never have an opportunity or an exchange with the fire department throughout their lives, and that's a good thing.
Right.
But the fact is, especially here in the South Bay, all of these fire departments are very small. El Segundo Fire Department, we have 14 people on duty per day, and to put it in perspective, if we had one single house fire, that would overwhelm those 14 people. So in the event of an earthquake, a severe earthquake, which we have had in our recent history, you may recall the earthquake in 1994, and a city just a few miles north of us, Santa Monica, had multiple fires, major damage that severely impacted their fire department and all of their public safety services.
Right.
And so you're 100% right. People, I hope, listen and take this seriously and begin to prepare themselves for a possible need to sustain themselves the experts typically recommend a minimum of 3 days, but you were right inferring it could be more like 2 weeks.
Right.
If I can just jump in here, and
please,
and Chief, we've always, in our training for the last 6 years, as I've been doing this now, we've jumped way away from that 3 days, and just briefly, because here we concentrate on on earthquakes, but in your case, you're on top of Chevron. In Palos Verdes, we have lots of other opportunities for landslides, fires, even with all of the trees. But my neighbor was just evacuated out of Jamestown, Colorado, on Saturday morning. They got back into town over the weekend and had wished they had taken our CERT class. They were 3 days cut off from the world and cut off from their son, who was on the other side of the stream, which had taken out two bridges and the only road into town. So, yeah, just, you know, not to get too far away from El Segundo, but
right.
You only have 14. Manhattan Beach, we have 9.
Right.
You have five more fire personnel in El Segundo, and your city during the week has, what, 3 times as many people?
Our daytime population right now, I believe, is estimated at about 85,000 people. Our nighttime population, or what we know as our residential population, is about 17,000. So we have a significant influx of people that come into the city on a daily basis to work. It's the city's pretty evenly divided. The west side of town is largely residential, and the east side of town, east of Sepulveda, is highly commercial, industrial, heavy industry.
And
so a large influx of people on a daily basis, yes.
I need to ask something here. Mm. Now, that's something that you see in every, like, you know, TV movie or horror story where there's a major disaster, is a small town, or not necessarily a small town, but a town where there's a lot of people that work there. Something happens, and they can't leave. So all of those people that come in, you know, what would it be, 50,000 additional people would have to be taken care of if for some reason, say, the freeway was closed or, you know, some of our friends in emergency preparedness always tell us that where we are, there's lines that, you know, the river and gas lines and freeways and stuff, and how we'd be cut off, you know. So taking into account that you wouldn't just have to worry about your bedroom population of 17,000, you could have a possible other 50,000 people that you have to feed and shelter.
That's absolutely true, and this is why we make every effort to partner with the business community and ensure that they recognize their responsibility for their employees. And I would say my perspective is that the large industry is pretty good about that. They they recognize the obligation, they recognize the threat, if you will. The hole that I see is smaller to medium business, a small mom and pop type business that these people are barely getting by. The last thing they're thinking about is investing a large amount of money in disaster preparedness.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where the hole will be. But ultimately, you can just imagine the emotion when somebody is separated by a distance from their family, the anxiety of not knowing the welfare of their family, and they're going to want to leave, but as you've indicated, the infrastructure might not be there, the roads may be closed, that type of thing,
right.
And so that goes back to overall preparedness. If parents prepare their children not only with supplies, but also with the mindset that have discussions with their children about what may occur and what to expect and so forth and so on. When they're separated, they can not be totally at ease, but more at ease than they might otherwise be, knowing that they've prepared their children or their loved ones for for an event.
This is fascinating, because it is something that all of our public safety officials throughout the South Bay have to deal with on a regular basis, and we're thankful that we can air these topics in this forum, because it's something that the public can go back and review over and over again. They can share it with neighbors very easily, and start a discussion. And there's something else too that I'd like to talk with you about, Chief, and that's the changing role of the fire department. No longer is the fire department just looked at to essentially fight fires and hazardous waste, which is a whole other subject, but the fire department now does a lot of things, and we've even talked to other departments in other cities about how some firemen are being embedded with the police departments on their SWAT units and actually carrying firearms. I'd like you to speak about the changing role of the fire department over your career.
Yes, well, I've been a firefighter for over 28 years now, and it has evolved. I would say the most significant change in the fire service was the paramedic program. That fire department was even 40, 50 years ago, we were involved in emergency medicine, but it would be an ambulance going out to a scene, firefighters with very little medical training, and they would essentially pick up a body, a patient, and just drive as fast as they can to the hospital. When paramedicine came into vogue in the early 1970s, it changed everything. Mm-hmm. What was realized was it was crucial to treat patients at the scene. If somebody is severely impacted by a heart attack or another significant event, the greatest service that we can provide is start treatment at the scene. So that is a significant accomplishment on the part of the fire service. Mm-hmm. I would say most fire departments nowadays, most of their calls are emergency medical calls. In El Segundo's case, we're about 65%, but some departments are even more. And so the title firefighter is almost a misnomer anymore. And as you've indicated, we've evolved into hazardous materials response, urban search and rescue, terrorism response. It goes on and on. Mm-hmm. I think we've adapted pretty well, but it's difficult to maintain expertise in all of those areas. A larger fire department would have people that specialize in certain areas, and so they can focus attention on specific areas, where a smaller fire department like ours, all of our people have to be have a fair amount of knowledge of a lot of things, it's a challenge. What you mentioned about embedding ourselves with the police department, that is something that we have taken on here recently in El Segundo. The term we use is tactical emergency medicine, and we recognize with some of the recent events, one as recent as yesterday, the event at the Naval Yard, that these violent acts, these large scale violent acts, where you have multiple people being shot at, the fire department can no longer sit and wait. Our position used to be that we would sit and wait during one of these events a block or two out. And what we've learned from these events, going all the way back to Columbine, is that sitting and waiting will actually result in a further loss of life than might have otherwise happened. So we are relooking at this and participating in training and a new paradigm, if you will. A new mindset that that our firefighters will be embedded with the SWAT team, make entry, be available to assist the SWAT members that go down, that may go down, a member of the public that may be impacted by a gunshot or another traumatic event, and that being there on the scene rather than waiting two blocks away until everything's safe is going to save lives.
So basically, we need to come up with a new name for the fire department.
I honestly believe that yes, the term firefighter is a misnomer. we have done one of the great services that we have done over the years, and I don't think we get enough credit for it, is it's not happenstance that that there's less fires nowadays. It's our efforts in fire prevention that have caused this reduction. And if we don't maintain those efforts, if we don't continue to get out in these buildings and ensure fire code compliance and safety compliance, we'll revert right back. And so I would say that the South Bay is a good example of an area in general where fire prevention has been very successful. You don't see large columns of smoke on a daily basis in the South Bay area. Mm-hmm. And again, I contend that it's not just happenstance that's happened. It's our efforts.
I'd like to give a shout out to firefighters in general in the Northeast, and in particular in Chicago. I'm from Chicago, and one of the worst kinds of events I can imagine is a fire in the middle of the winter, where it's, you know, 5-10 below, maybe with a wind chill, and there's a fire, and they're using water, and there's ice everywhere, and it is just the most unimaginable to me, my personal sort of height of glory for a firefighter to do that job when it's so cold, and then you have this inferno, and you're trying to save obviously lives, and then after saving lives, you're trying to save property. Firefighting is it has a storied past, but now it has a really bright future. But we aren't quite sure what to call it. It's emergency services response. It is fire suppression, as you say. If you don't continue to focus on fire prevention and fire safety and fire codes and all that, then fires will become more prevalent again. It's a big job, Chief.
Yes, it is. But I'm proud to say that talking about the evolution of the fire department during my career, I'm very conscious of the fact that this has become what I would describe more as a profession than than almost a trade. That there is a significant emphasis on education, on training and evolution, and yes, we do have a heavy burden in terms of all the things that we're responsible for, but we've also evolved as a service and recognize that you just don't sit here in a fire station and wait for something to happen and then figure it out when you get there. Right. We actually go and engage and seek out knowledge and expertise from people that have been there before. And I think that's a significant improvement in the fire service overall in terms of making ourselves a more professional organization and better prepared to support and maintain the safety of the community.
Right. I was very impressed talking with Chief Mitch Tavera, the police chief in El Segundo, and his description of the educational process and the requirements for advancement in the police department. It's very much become a situation for both police and fire that education is essential to advance in the ranks and just to obviously deal with all the different jobs that you have, hazardous waste materials and all of the training and education around that. And then the paramedicine has advanced to the point of amazing feats of being able to restart hearts and to stop blood flows and all of these things that people do now. But with really advanced equipment, paramedicine or paramedics has become a science in and of itself. And then, of course, then we're back to just plain old firefighting skills. It's amazing what 14 people have to be prepared to do in El Segundo.
It's all of those things, Joe, and much more. That what you all have to take into consider is this is a business in a way that we have a budget, we have people, we have personnel issues. So You were talking about the police chief's emphasis on education.
Right.
I'm also passionate about education. I and my battalion chiefs, the captains, we're supervising, we're managing people in a complex society, and the good old days of a firehouse being like a frat house, it just doesn't work anymore. And much like a business, we have budget preparation. Certainly in recent years, budgets have become much more scrutinized based upon not only the downturn in the economy, but also public expectations. You know, that people are watching. They're concerned where their tax dollars go, and there's been so many stories of waste that people are watching. So you need people that are passionate, but also educated professionals that are overseeing these very expensive operations. Otherwise, I think, you know, problems have the potential to come up.
Mm-hmm. Right. Wow. We are talking with Chief of the Fire Department in El Segundo, and this is amazing where we are now. We've had several discussions with police chiefs and fire departments around the South Bay, and we're going to continue to do that. We're talking with Chief Kevin Smith of the El Segundo Fire Department, and we will continue. If you want to join the conversation, we'd love to have you. You can call us at 714-242-5288. That's 714-242-5288. We'd love for you to talk with Chief Kevin Smith, ask him a question, make a comment. You're welcome to do that if you're listening to us live. And we're excited to have you, Chief. What are some of the initiatives that are ongoing right now as you are coming into the offices and thinking about what your day is? What are some of the things happening in current time in the police, in the fire department in El Segundo?
Well, I would say that unfortunately, a lot of what I have had to think of in over the last 3 or 4 years is cuts. Budget deficits have been a significant challenge here in El Segundo, and we talked about our staffing of 14 3 or 4 years ago. Our staffing was 19 on a daily basis. So we've reduced our workforce by nearly 30%. And so my challenges are providing a similar service. It can't be the same service, but a similar service to the community with nearly a 30% smaller workforce. And unfortunately, it looks like the city isn't out of financial challenges yet. So there's already discussion in future years that we may be facing more challenges.
Now, all the beach cities are unique. El Segundo, in particular, has one of the largest concentrations of Fortune 500, Fortune 200 companies in the world, or certainly in the United States. It's a very vibrant corporate community. Couldn't the corporate community contribute some to the fire and safety, police safety side of the equation, when obviously thousands and thousands of their employees will be impacted if a disaster occurs during daytime hours?
Yes, well, the way that most cities get money from businesses is through taxes. And in El Segundo's case, the businesses pay the lion's share of our revenues as it is. That that's already the case. And we could get into a big political debate, but I'm not able to do that while I'm on duty. But
no.
you know, the whole idea is taxing more a good thing to do, or taxing less a good thing to do. I can assure you that the city is stuck in a difficult situation where if they overtax these businesses will pick up and move. That there are many states, Texas, Colorado, that would love to woo some of the, as you described, the Fortune 500 companies to their locations, and it would be easy for them to do. And so this city has to make sure that it's careful in not overtaxing, not overburdening these businesses to the point where they pick up and leave, and then our financial situation is even worse. So. Mm-hmm. I don't know the answer, but I definitely feel the challenges, and
right.
I hope that this trend in El Segundo reverses its course in the not too distant future. It's been very dramatic for the members of the fire department and certainly their families, worrying about their jobs and worrying about their careers.
Right.
For extended periods, I have had to lay off a few people due to budgets. Most of the cuts that we've made have been done through attrition, thankfully, so we didn't have to fire or lay off too many people. But unfortunately, the future still shows that there are challenges for the city of El Segundo.
Well, we'll continue our conversation with you, Chief, and I know we won't solve all the problems, but we will continue the conversation. Now we're going to take a station break, and Jackie, which sponsor are we going to thank today?
Well, Joe, you know it's never too early to begin planning your financial future. When it comes to protecting your assets and hard-earned dollars, you'll want experienced professionals with a proven track record and flawless reputation on your team. Briganti Cameron Waters & Strong, certified public accountants and consultants, is the largest full-service accounting firm in the South Bay, and they are dedicated to providing professional services of the highest quality. The partners are South Bay residents deeply committed to serving the communities where they live, work, and play. They support a variety of local nonprofit organizations such as Skate Park PV, Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy, the Torrance South Bay YMCA, Rotary, Pediatric Therapy Network, and others. BCWS prides itself on providing national accounting technical experience with the personal attention of a local company. This commitment to uphold high standards of excellence has proven key to their success and first-rate reputation. Their ultimate goal and reward is to see their clients achieve financial success as they define it, whether that means helping them to reduce their tax burden, assisting them with planning to ensure their financial security, succession planning, exit strategies, and wealth transfer. The partners and professionals of BCWS are committed to providing their clients with the expertise and guidance they need to reach their financial goals. Briganti Cameron Waters & Strong is dedicated to helping you navigate to financial success. You can call 310-542-0011 for a free consultation, or you can visit the website at www.bcws.com.
BCWS.com. I love short domain names.
I know you do.
BCWS. Just go to the domain name just because it's short. That's the only reason.
I'm going to jump in here real quick, Chief Smith. I got to tell you, I grew up, well, I'm not going to say how long ago, but in New York.
You did?
Yeah.
I'm not sure at times I have yet. Just ask my wife.
But I have many, many, many friends in the fire service in New York City. And they went into it in the 70s, the 80s, you know. And to this day, many of them are retired at this point or soon to retire. But they I've heard complaints over the years that the changes in the fire department and particularly the paramedicine aspect of it, mm-hmm. how a lot of these guys are just, you know something, this is not what I got into the fire department for. If I wanted to do medicine, I would have been a doctor. I want to fight fires, you know? I guess it's the older school, the old mm-hmm. school fireman, you know, it's mm-hmm. completely, completely different thing now.
Jackie, I think you're correct in my perspective that I've known some New York City firefighters over the years, and first of all, they're extraordinary. They're extraordinarily brave and always willing to do battle or whatever is necessary to save a life. But I would also describe them as very traditional, very steeped in tradition. And the evolution that we've made on the West Coast, they have resisted. They've somewhat gotten away with it because they still do have a lot more fires than we do here on the West Coast. And I would their fires have been reduced, but they still do have them. And I would say that that's part and parcel to them not emphasizing fire prevention like as much as we have here on the West Coast, and that traditional mentality where we don't want to change. And it's my perspective that West Coast fire departments are some of the most progressive in the United States. And the truth be told, if we didn't get into paramedicine, I don't know what would happen to most fire departments. I mean, there would be nothing to sustain their existence. And so somebody had a lot of foresight when they took this on. It's a good fit. You know, we're a 24/7 operation, in many of the fire departments in LA where we've talked about before, that you know, anywhere from 50%, 60% to 80% of their calls are EMS or emergency medical related. If you didn't have those calls, what would those firefighters be doing, or how would you justify paying, you know, for them to be sitting and waiting for the occasional fire?
Right.
Yeah. No, I get that. The older cities, the bigger cities, you know, the density, they obviously have a lot more fires that, you know, that they have to deal with. Yeah. And again, as you said, the tradition, you know, the traditional roles and stuff. Yeah. I just thought I'd throw that in.
No, it's a very interesting, it brings into relief and highlights how fast and how far some fire departments have gone in transforming themselves into service organizations.
And the smaller ones are more nimble. You know, they're more nimble,
Emergency services response is almost a description, but not a name, of what fire departments do in smaller communities. Chicago, I think, is very similar in a way to New York. Lots of in my neighborhood, lots and lots of older wood structures, you know, homes from the 40s and 50s are still very well occupied. 40s, 50s, what am I saying? 20s and 30s are still very heavily occupied. And every once in a while, when a fire occurs, it becomes a huge undertaking. So fire departments still deal with a lot of fires in older eastern cities. Here in the West, newer construction, different kinds of construction. What do you say, Chief, about the new people coming in to the fire service as young people think about choosing to be a firefighter or a police officer? I remember lots of police officers in my youth when I was young, because a friend of mine was a police captain, police chief. We are looking to the police and the fire, but police I'm not talking about, as protectors, as protectors of the peace. But nowadays, it seems the police do a lot of, I would say, psychological evaluation, and they do negotiation of disputes, and it's become a very interesting, different kind of a profession these days. Can you comment on that?
Yes, absolutely. I think I think that's very germane to what we've been discussing. The mentality of an incoming firefighter, it needs to be that this idea of fighting fire and saving lives, pulling babies out of a burning window, that's not the modern day fire service. That's not what we do on a regular basis. It doesn't mean that it can't happen. It doesn't mean that they don't need to be prepared or trained to do that. But that's a small element of our job. And so, if a firefighter recruit comes into this field or into this service with that mindset that I want to fight fire 24 hours a day, they're going to be disappointed. And what I would look for, or what I would hope, or what I would guide them is look at ways, opportunities to focus on providing customer service, quality customer service, in any way that you're able to connect with the community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's truly what we've evolved into, and something that I emphasize with my people today, and certainly when I hire a new firefighter, that when somebody picks up the phone and calls 911, it's significant to them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a significant event. We might not look at it as the most significant event that we've ever dealt with, but to that person, it's a big deal. And so, when we get to that scene, I expect people to be professional, resolve the issue, but also be courteous and leave a positive feeling with this person. It's so crucial, especially in a small town, that much like throwing a stone into the pond, when you make a negative impression, those waves, those ripples, they continue on. And and much the same way, when you make a positive impression, Betty Jo's telling Georgette, who's telling Mary Lou, and this is the type of environment that I want to create, which is a positive connection with this community. That I want this community to know that we're here to serve their needs, and those needs have evolved. It's not just sitting here and waiting for the occasional fire.
Right.
Chief, I saw something on the news recently, a couple of weeks ago maybe, about how police departments are having trouble finding qualified candidates to fill the ranks. And I was curious, does the fire department have that issue?
No, Jackie, actually, we experience the opposite, that firefighting has long been a career that many people seek, and there are many more qualified candidates than the fire service will ever use. And so I coach young people. I used to teach at a fire academy. I taught fire science at a college, and I would always coach the young people to have a backup plan, because not everybody that wants to be a firefighter is going to be one. It's the math just doesn't work. So yeah, it's interesting how two public safety type organizations we could be so different in that way, that we never have a shortage of qualified applicants.
That's good to know.
this. Okay.
I'm sorry. Wait. Let me see. What did Chief Tavera say last week? He was one of them that got in the wrong line.
Yes, that's
he did say that, Chief. He did say that. I know.
Yeah,
that.
That's some of the longstanding banter between firefighters and police officers.
Yep.
And again, although our careers are related and both service oriented and helping people, the daily tasks and duties are very different. And I would say that any firefighter would tell you that they respect police officers, but they would never want to be one. And police officers, although they joke about the firefighter's lifestyle and that type of thing, and a little bit of jealousy there, but still ultimately They chose their career path for a reason. And so,
they really want to be firefighters. They're just not going to admit it.
Yeah, well, that's... That's
careful, we may have some serious backlashes here now.
Well, it goes on, that banter, so it won't be anything new.
I know, yeah. In classes at EMI back east, where you have both police and fire, and you get a whole week of it going back and forth. A lot of fun. The greatest respect for both. And they and our military are... you, our military, our police, right. You all are the ones that keep us safe on a daily basis, as best as we will allow you.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead,
Joe. No, go on, Chief.
No, I just want to say that I appreciate those words. I consider it a huge honor to serve in this career. I've been very blessed, and but I 100% agree with you, George, that these. Whether it's a police officer or a member of our armed forces, these are all people that have made a conscious decision that they're willing to put their life on the line at a moment's notice for the benefit of others, and that's a special person.
Mm. Self-sacrifice in the public arena. It's something that we can honor, hopefully anew, and maybe even make special emphasis going forward, and begin to, for me, having a significant military family background. My dad was in the Navy. My wife's father was in the Air Force. My brother-in-law, my wife's sister's husband, was career Army. We need to pay our military more. We need to ensure that they are protected and taken care of when they come back, and we can do a lot more there. George, I'm gonna throw it to you for our announcements of future events and future shows. What's coming up, George?
Well, let's see. Our next show this next week is going to be Joanne Scordino. Joanne is a disaster consultant. She works for Organize with Action Consulting. Mm-hmm. And this next week, we're going to talk about disaster preparedness with older adults and some that have challenges. And I said older adults. We're not talking about the elderly. We are older adults in Manhattan Beach.
Mm-hmm.
We may follow this up in a couple of weeks with another get together with Joanne, talking about as we get older and being able to sustain and understand what nature might be able to provide us down the road. Mm-hmm. in disaster and surviving and taking care of both ourselves and our environment. Mm-hmm. On 10/12. Not that far away, mm-hmm. but the Beach City's joint shakeout drill will take place in Palos Verdes. That's where we of the Area G, 11 of the cities, actually now it's 12 that I know of, including Torrance has now joined us, get together and we practice our skills and we prepare for what will happen someday. Sometime in November, we will have the Manhattan Beach Fire Department and City Muster. But then before that, on 10, 18, 19, and 20, October 18, 19, 20, a Friday evening, all day Saturday, Sunday, Manhattan Beach will put on their next CERT class. If anybody's interested in any of this information, they can contact me at info@mbcerta.org. I'd be more than happy to send them some additional information. And that's it for this moment. We're getting mm-hmm. into the fall season, and I'm looking forward to, like today, the weather has changed just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well,
we will see.
This series has been such a great series. We've had recently, July 30th, we had Chief Eve Irvine from the Manhattan Beach PD on the show, and I want to ask you, Chief Smith, are there greater emphasis on, with all of these jobs and all of these skills that firefighters have to have today, but with firefighting being a smaller and smaller part of the mix, are women being recruited, or are women even taking the challenge on and thinking, I can be a firefighter because I can be a paramedic, I can be the various things, and don't have to go up the ladder and carry a woman down a burning, you know, from a burning building or something like that. Are more women applying for fire service?
I would say that relative to 30, 40 years ago, yes.
Mm.
Need to be clear that I'm in 100% agreement that that we have reduced the incidence of fires through our fire prevention efforts, but human error, mechanical breakdown, we will never totally eliminate fires.
Mm.
And that being the case, we still have to maintain that same expertise of 20, 30 years ago when there were large amounts of fire or increased frequency of fire, if not more so, because the hazards are so much greater in these modern day buildings, the chemicals, the products that buildings are constructed out of. So even though the incidence of fire has been reduced, we cannot afford to de-emphasize, if you will, our training, our preparation, and so in terms of how that relates to females, the fire service has welcomed, has encouraged females to become members. We here in El Segundo have been very progressive in that way. We have two female firefighters, which is, I would say, more than most, if not all, in the South Bay on a proportional level.
Mm-hmm.
And, Chief, I'm sorry, but is one is a captain, is she not?
Yes, one is a captain, which is again an extraordinary accomplishment. One is a paramedic, one is a captain, and but they have to meet the same physical demands that all incoming firefighters. There's no special consideration for a female coming into this field, because whether it's fires or any other thing that we could respond to, most of the work is very physical. Even going on a medical call, it's not uncommon to have to take a 300-pound person from the third story, you know, down stairways, doing CPR. So physical fitness will always be a component of this career.
Mm-hmm.
Not only relative to fire, but most of the work that we do, it still is a very physical career.
I see. Yeah, absolutely.
And the fact of the matter is, if I'm in a burning building and there's a ladder coming up, somebody's coming up the ladder to get me, I want some big burly guy carrying me out of there. All right? I don't want to see some 5'2", 100-pound woman. I want somebody that's going to be able to pick me up and throw me over their shoulder and get me out of there.
A big burly guy with maybe no shirt on or something like that?
That would work too. I'm just saying.
Yeah, well, we would love to do special requests, but I can assure you that whoever comes up the ladder will be ready and capable to assist you.
Thank you, Chief.
This has been an amazing conversation, Chief Kevin Smith. I mean, you really have covered the entire breadth and perspective of a fire department. We've talked about East Coast versus West Coast. We really have covered a lot of ground regarding the modern fire service of today, the fire department of today, which we find to be even a small title for all of the things that your department has to do, including fire suppression and firefighting. There's a ton of other stuff you have to do, but you seem to have command of it, and it's very comforting to know. I think if I were living in El Segundo, I would feel very secure that that the people at the top know what they're doing and have a good command of what the issues are. We have 14 firefighters. We need more than less. Let me make the political statement. We need more than less. We don't need budget cuts in public safety. We need budget increases in public safety. I know it is easy to say and hard to do, but still, we need more people educated, well trained, ready to help us in time of crisis. Even though we each have to take responsibility for our own lives, that's certainly true. Thank you very much, Chief Kevin Smith, for being with us today.
It's been my great pleasure.
What kinds of information would you like to give out to the public in terms of CERT classes in El Segundo or other times that people can interact with the fire department in general? What would you like to give out to people? How can they get in touch with the fire department?
Well, one of the easiest ways is to go to the city's website, elsegundo.org, where we will constantly keep people aware of upcoming programs such as CERT programs. We're on a path to about 3 to 4 CERT classes per year, and we've had a great deal of success in that arena. Another thing that that we're very proud of, this city has put on an event that we call Super CPR Saturday, where we typically train about 300 people per year in CPR. If there's one thing that I could emphasize to the general public, is learning CPR. If I had my way, it would be taught in the high schools. I can't think of a better skill to be taught in school than how to save a life. It's not complicated. It doesn't take much time, and what could be more valuable? So we're very proud of that program. It takes place typically in May of every year at El Segundo High School, and that information would also be available on the city's website. We also have volunteer programs kind of co-hosted through the police department and the fire department, neighborhood watch events where police officers, police department staff, fire department staff will go out to neighborhood groups and offer education, offer input, offer the opportunity for the public to ask questions about anything emergency related that they may be concerned with. So we make a conscious effort to engage in the community and keep them prepared.
Right. And Chief, today, wouldn't you say people need to refresh their CPR training, even if they've had CPR training, like, let's say, 10 years ago? Because there's some new thinking regarding CPR lately, isn't there?
Yes. Well, in terms of the certified course, in order to be certified in CPR, you need to refresh or recertify every 2 years. The technology itself has changed many times over the years in terms of how many compressions and how many breaths. And a more recent evolution of CPR is something known as sidewalk CPR, where studies have found that the breaths are not necessarily as important as the compressions.
Right.
And the hope is that people that might be reluctant to go mouth to mouth on somebody would at least do the compression. So
right.
The county EMS agency, Emergency Medical Services Agency, has placed a significant emphasis on compression only CPR, something that can be taught literally on the sidewalk in 5 minutes and provide a great deal of value. It doesn't mean that the professional standard has changed. The
right.
professional standard still exists that they want us or somebody that's certified to do respirations and compressions. But for the person walking on the street, the compressions could be adequate.
I see. Well, this has been a fascinating hour. Thank you so much, Chief Kevin Smith of the El Segundo Fire Department.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, George.
Thank you.
And thank you, Jackie.
Always a pleasure, Joe.
All right. That's our show for the day, ladies and gentlemen. Have a great time this week, and please join us for Thursday. Bye-bye now.